You're listening to Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. Located in Lowell, Massachusetts, we read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lab Radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. Lab would like to thank the Nancy L. and Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support.
This is Fran reading Saturday, April 4th, Sun, first page. And at the top of the first page, we have an article entitled Another Domino Falls in the Asian Boy's Counterfeit Pill Ring. This by Aaron Curtis. He gives his email address, acurtis@lowellsun.com, acurtis@lowellsun.com, although it's datelined Boston. It says, another man linked to the so-called Asian Boys meth-laced counterfeit pill ring is now headed to prison. Richard Nguyen, that's N-G-U-Y-E-N, 30, of Lowell, known by his nickname of Cheese, was sentenced Thursday to serve 10 years and 8 months in prison for his role in the large-scale drug operation that included the manufacture and sale of homemade pills branded to look like the pharmaceutical-grade Adderall. U.S. Attorney Leah Foley's office said that the investigation, which was launched back in 2021, targeted the ABZ drug distribution network in Lowell. Between March 2022 and January 2025, Mr. Nguyen, that's again N-G-U-Y-E-N, identified by prosecutors as an associate of the gang and others, sold counterfeit Adderall pills to undercover officers and cooperating witnesses on 47 different occasions. During Nguyen's November trial, prosecutors presented evidence that he personally sold counterfeit pills to a cooperating witness 3 times between January and April 2024. Each deal took place at Nguyen's Lowell home on a tarp-covered back porch, accessible only through a narrow hallway. According to prosecutors, Mr. Nguyen arranged the sales through the Instagram account of the name Cheese, offering pills at 80 cents each, and explaining, quote, that he needed to make his dollar, end quote. During the first deal, Nguyen sold the cooperating witness approximately 1,000 pills. During the next 2 deals, he sold approximately 2,000 pills each time. In federal court in Boston last November, a jury found Nguyen guilty of 2 counts of distributing and possessing, with intent to distribute, 500 grams or more of methamphetamine, as well as 1 count involving 50 grams or more. In a sentencing memorandum filed ahead of Thursday's sentencing, Nguyen's attorney, Blake Rubin, wrote that his client is remorseful and accepts the jury's decision. Quoting him, Mr. Nguyen made the foolhardy choice to supplement his income by selling pills that contain methamphetamine. Mr. Nguyen's choice to earn what appears to be a very limited amount of money illegally was clearly a very poor decision, end quote. Attorney Rubin urged the court to impose the minimum 10-year sentence, arguing that Nguyen, still a relatively young man with his entire life ahead of him, and, quote, this poor choice will forever upend his life, end quote. Again, Attorney Rubin described Nguyen as a first-generation Vietnamese-American who grew up in a financially unstable household and struggled with substance abuse, something he hopes to receive counseling for. He noted that Nguyen has had steady employment in a variety of jobs throughout his adult life and continued working while on release, pending trial, and staying out of trouble. Rubin characterized Nguyen's criminal history as, quote, very limited, end quote. Court documents show that he was charged in 2015 with negligent operation of a motor vehicle and racing a motor vehicle, resulting in a 1-year continuance without a finding, which was essentially a year of probation, with both counts being ultimately dismissed. The defense also submitted to the court several letters of support, including one from a person who described Nguyen as, quote, compassionate, respectful, and deeply loyal to the people in his life. It says he is not alone and he will not be returning to the same mindset or circumstances without growth. I believe in him and I believe he deserves the opportunity to prove that he can move forward in a responsible and meaningful way, end quote. In the prosecution sentencing memorandum, Assistant U.S. Attorney Fred Wyshuk, that's W-Y-S-H-A-K, urged the court to impose an 11-year sentence, writing that the investigation revealed that Wynn was a, quote, seasoned drug trafficker and well-connected with the gang associations of Lowell's criminal underworld, end quote. Attorney Wishak also said that Wynn, again quoting him, relied on those connections implying a robust drug trade over an extended period of time and showed no reservations distributing harmful and destructive substances for his own personal gain, end quote. The prosecutor noted that the counterfeit Adderall pills, identical in size, shape, color, and markings to the legitimate pharmaceutical, were pressed with a mixture of methamphetamine and caffeine. He described this form of distribution as a, quote, aggravating factor, writing that selling narcotics in a pill designed to imitate a prescription medication creates heightened risks to end users, and that Wynn's apparent indifference to the special dangerousness of distributing counterfeit Adderall should be fully appreciated. Attorney Wishak also cited warnings from the Drug Enforcement Administration that, quote, international and domestic criminal gangs, I should say drug networks, gangs and criminal drug networks were flooding the United States with lethal counterfeit pills, which are often manufactured in subpar condition by amateur manufacturers and drug dealers with no chemistry training and no quality control mechanisms. End quote. He pointed to the DEA's 2024 National Threat Assessment that found that meth-related drug poisoning deaths rank second only to the potent opioid fentanyl. And in addition to the 11-year prison term, Wishak requested 5 years of supervision as a release, writing that Wynn posed a, quote, high risk of recidivism, end quote. He said that the recommended sentence reflected the seriousness of the crime while providing just punishment to deter Wynn and others from being seduced by the potential of financial gain from trafficking methamphetamine and other dangerous substances in the future. U.S. District Court Judge Brian Murphy ultimately sentenced Wynn to 10 years and 8 months in prison and agreed to impose 5 years of supervised release. Wynn is one of several Lowell residents prosecuted as part of the broader investigation into the ABC counterfeit pill operation. Foley's office has said that the multiple-year probe resulted in the seizure of roughly 57,000 counterfeit pills, weighing nearly 40 pounds. Other defendants from Lowell have already received federal sentences, including high-ranking gang member Sadi Bad Guy Roth, that's S-A-R-Y-R-A-T-H, who was sentenced to 11 and one-fourth years in prison. Also Bill Bones, Phim, that's B-O-N-E-Z, P-H-I-M, receiving a 10-year sentence. Brian Cheech Gingras, C-H-E-E-C-H as his nickname, Gingras, G-I-N-G-R-A-S as his last name, sentenced to 9 years behind bars. And Erickson Silent Dao, D-A-O, receiving 7 years. There was also Isaiah Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, who was known by the alias Tank, or Rose, R-O-Z-A-Y, is scheduled to be sentenced later this month. In announcing Wynn's sentence, federal prosecutors credited Lowell's Police Department, Billerica Police, and State Police for assisting in the investigation. You also see on the front page a large colored picture of Pat Scherer, S-C-H-E-R-E-R, of Milford, Mass., competing at a Special Olympic Summer Game back in 2017, being held at Harvard's Athletic Complex in Boston. It is being shown to discuss the possibility of Lowell being considered for the 2027 Summer Games by the Special Olympics. This article by Melanie Gilbert, her email address, mgilbert@lowellsun.com, that's M-G-I-L-B-E-R-T, @lowellsun.com. It says, officials with the Special Olympics Massachusetts spoke to the Lowell Disability Commission in January about the bid process for the Summer Games of 2027 that are typically held in June. And traditionally, Boston and Cambridge have hosted the week-long events at Harvard or Boston University, but Matt Ruxton, that's R-U-X-T-O-N, who's vice president of sports for the Olympic Games, said the organization was soliciting municipalities to host the games in the interest of due diligence. Quoting him, Special Olympics Massachusetts has enjoyed a wonderful relationship with our hosts over the two past decades, but that means we have not explored opportunities to engage with other communities across the Commonwealth to host the largest competition in over 20 years. He said this by email Tuesday. He said, as an organization that serves all of Massachusetts, we have offered this bid request to any community interested in bringing inclusive sports to the forefront. Besides Lowell, Ruxton said Special Olympics had interest from Worcester and Springfield, and the organization continues to accept bids and review all options. The Special Olympics is a global organization that was established in 1968. It provides year-round sports training and athletic competition in a variety of Olympic-type sports for children and adults with intellectual disabilities. This Massachusetts branch was founded in 1971 and boasts more than 16,000 registered athletes and partners, more than 1,000 coaches, and more than 9,000 volunteers. Although it hosts year-round sports training and athletic competition, the organization's premier event is its summer games, which are attended by thousands of athletes, supporters, and spectators. According to the Disability Commission's meeting minutes, the body agreed to reach out to the city manager's office and other appropriate persons in the office in order to potentially move forward. The commission thanked Mr. Ruxton for his efforts and hopefully furthering our connection to the Massachusetts Special Olympics for other collaborations, said the minutes. Lowell's bid process is in its very early stages, said Melissa DeRoche, that's DeRoches, who is executive assistant to City Manager Golden. Quoting her, there were preliminary conversations with the Disability Commission to gather information on what the scope of that proposal would look like, the cost, volunteers, funding, identifying locations within the city, etc. Nothing has been confirmed or determined for the 2027 bid, end quote. A bid of this size and influence would require the collaboration of numerous partners, many of whom said they were unaware of the opportunity, although some, like Greater Lowell Chamber of Commerce Interim Executive Director Lindsay Former, was supportive of the idea. Quoting her, I wasn't aware that Lowell had expressed an interest in hosting the 2027 Special Olympics, but it's incredibly exciting to hear. This would be an amazing opportunity for the city and a great way to showcase Lowell on a larger stage, end quote. The housing city would be required to provide high-quality facilities and resources to house, transport, and host competitions for thousands of Special Olympics athletes, their families, and volunteers. Ruxton went on to say that these athletes train and compete in cities and towns across Massachusetts throughout the year, and when they travel to summer games, they expect it to feel like the biggest event on the calendar. End quote. Like Boston University and Harvard, Lowell's Middlesex Community College and UMass Lowell are best positioned to provide the logistics to host sporting events of this size and quality for the Special Olympics Summer Games in Lowell. Middlesex Community College Vice President of Administration Patrick Cook said MCC was always a proud partner for special events happening in Lowell. Went on to say just this week we met with the Folk Festival Committee and we've been an integral part of the bicentennial event planning. Any discussions are still in the early planning stage, but when the details are finalized and logistics are ready to be announced, Middlesex will absolutely be involved in any event featuring our great city of Lowell, end quote. Bryant Bradbury, who's executive director of the Revolutionary Valley Regional Tourism Council, did not return a request for a comment on this bid. Based in Lowell, on Merrimack Street, the council was designated by the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism to promote the 21 communities in the region. In January, it released an economic report on the New England Golden Gloves Tournament, which was hosted in Lowell every year. The city is already scheduled to host the National Golden Gloves Tournament of Champions in June 2027. Ruxton said the Special Olympics continues to explore opportunities across the Commonwealth for its 2027 Summer Games and said, quoting him, we are still locked into a bid process, which includes meetings, visiting potential sites, and maintaining open conversations with potential partners. Still on the front page, a rather bizarre article and with an even more bizarre photo. It has here at the bottom of the front page a black and white photo of infant and adult orangutan skulls. This by Tim Dunn, who's with the Herald. He gives his email address as timdunn@bostonherald.com. That's timdunn@bostonherald.com. A Reading man has been sentenced in federal court for operating a disturbing business that saw him traffic over 100 body parts from various endangered and protective species into the country, including orangutan and tiger skulls, also jaguar skin and pangolins. I'm not sure of that word, whether that's pangolin or pangolin, that's P-A-N-G-O-L-I-N, and selling this all for a profit. U.S. Senior District Court Judge Dennis Saylow, S-A-Y-L-O-W, the fourth, sentenced Adam Bied, B-I-E-D, 40 years of age, Thursday, to 8 months in federal prison, followed by 2 years of supervised release, according to court documents. Bied is also ordered to pay a $75,000 fine that will go toward funding wildlife enforcement. He pleaded guilty back in January to 2 counts of conspiracy to smuggle goods into the United States and 2 counts of violating the Lacey Act, that's L-A-C-E-Y, which prohibits trafficking in wildlife. He was arrested and charged back in June 2024. As U.S. Attorney Leah Foley said in a written statement, quote, "Trafficking in the remains of endangered and protected animals is not a collector's hobby. It's a crime. It fuels exploitation of vulnerable species around the world. And as the Department of Justice has made clear, protecting animal welfare and enforcing our wildlife laws is a priority. This defendant knowingly smuggled and profited from killing protected animals, some of which were slaughtered at his direction, undermining global conservation efforts. Today's sentence holds him accountable and sends a clear message. Those who traffic in wildlife will be investigated and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law." End quote. Prosecutors say that Bied began the illegal enterprise at least as early as 2018, January, and continued selling wildlife parts until June 2021, knowingly violating the ESA and the Lacey Act, and also failing to declare the imported wildlife to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. He would place orders for specific animal body parts with co-conspirators in Cameroon and Indonesia, who would then acquire and kill the wildlife for Mr. Bied. Once received in the United States, he resold the parts for a profit and conducted trades. Investigators uncovered text messages between Bied and his co-conspirator in Cameroon, where the two of them discussed hunting and killing the wildlife he desired, while also highlighting the strains of their business caused by ongoing civil war in Cameroon. For example, the attorney's office said, quote, "In June 2018, when CC1 told Bied that he was unable to obtain bullets for hunting wildlife due to ongoing civil war, Mr. Bied offered to send him the bullets. After CC1, and I think that means co-conspirator 1, said that he would go to jail if he's caught receiving ammunition during an ongoing civil war, Bied offered to send him money for bullets instead in exchange for skulls, including, as discussed, chimpanzee skulls. Bied also requested a gorilla skull. Both gorillas and chimpanzees are considered endangered, and most gorilla species are critically endangered. Bied also sought to purchase skulls from elephants, lions, hippos, and other rare and large animals, adding that in another exchange, he requested that none of the skulls sent to him have bullet holes in them. In another exchange, Bied was apparently at an educational exhibit at a zoo that had a display about illegal wildlife trafficking. After seeing a pangolin, and again, I'm not familiar with this word, I'll say it's a pangolin, P-A-N-G-O-L-I-N, or a pangolin, featured in the display, was considered the most heavily trafficked wild mammal in the world. He then texted his co-conspirator later that day, asking him to purchase a pangolin or a pangolin skull. All subspecies of pangolins are protected under CITES. Not sure what that international board is, but that is an acronym for that board, CITES. The feds also looked over Bied's sickening business partnership with the co-conspirator in Indonesia. Bied purchased multiple orangutan and Javan leopard skulls from Indonesia. Both of those species are critically endangered. Bied later sold 2 illegally imported leopard skulls to an undercover federal agent. During the negotiations over 1 skull, Bied lied about its origin, falsely claiming to the agent that the leopard skull was at least 60 years old and that he had purchased it at an auction, while in reality it had been illegally imported from Indonesia. Assistant Director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Doug Ault, AULT, said, quote, "Our agency works diligently to combat the illegal international trafficking of wildlife parts due to the devastating effect on the wide variety of vulnerable species. In their quest for quick profit, wildlife smugglers push critically endangered animals toward the edge of extinction and undermine global conservation efforts." There are also two small black and white photos of leopard skins that were sold by Vied and seized by federal authority. And we still have one article on the front page by Lance Reynolds with the Herald. His email, lreynolds@bostonherald.com, L-R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S at bostonherald.com. It says, sued for blocking the voter-approved audit of the state legislature, Senate President Karen Spielka is opening up on her resistance, arguing that Auditor Diana DeSoglio is trying to act like a monarch. State Representative Danielle Gregoire, G-R-E-G-O-I-R-E, a fellow Framingham Democrat, is also taking heat for defending Ms. Spielka and the legislature's blockage of this audit that 72% of Bay Staters approved 16 months ago. A feisty exchange ensued at Framingham City Hall this week when the city's state delegation appeared in front of the city council. The legislative audit at the center of a lawsuit that Ms. DeSoglio filed against Spielka and House Speaker Ron Mariano inevitably came up. Councillor Michael Cannon, that's C-A-N-N-O-N, asked the lawmakers how the legislature could improve after the Society of Professional Journalists late last month named Massachusetts recipient of the 2026 Black Hole Award, which recognizes a troubling lack of transparency and disregard for the public's right to know. The SBJ cited deficiencies in the state's public records law in selecting the Bay State with this annual dishonor. Gregoire responded first, labeling DeSoglio's new ballot initiative, which seeks to subject the legislature and the governor's office to the public records law, as a, quote, vendetta against the legislature. Gregoire continued, "I want to make this opportunity perfectly clear. The legislature is audited every single year, so where's the audit question? The answer is right here in this binder," she said, pointing to a large book that was filled with various tabs. The lawmaker added that following the overwhelming approval of the audit, the state legislature allowed the auditor to select an outside independent firm, but the auditor has not complied, according to Ms. Gregoire. Spielka then followed, highlighting that the Senate is audited every single year, and that Bacon Hill leadership selects from a certified list of independent recognized auditors. Quoting Ms. Spielka, "That word independent is a very key word here. As Representative Gregoire said, the auditor's claims are, I believe, a political audit wanting to solve something." End quote. Spielka said that both the Senate and the House provide the auditor with financial information every year, and that the public can find procurements, contracts, expenditures, and salaries all on the state controller's website. Continuing her comments, "You will be able to go down to almost paper clips that we buy," she says. "And again, I don't know what else is necessary to go through. There's nothing to hide." End quote. The responses from Ms. Gregoire and Ms. Spielka puzzled Cannon, who said that he didn't ask about the audit and that he wasn't aware of Ms. DeSoglio's public records ballot question push. He says, "I guess I don't understand why the resistance to welcoming the additional set of eyes on the business. You're doing on behalf of the people of the Commonwealth, so why not welcome that?" Ms. Spielka responded that the opposition is mainly due to the belief that Ms. DeSoglio would violate the separations of powers clause and other clauses of the Constitution. She said, "They didn't want a king to happen here in Massachusetts, so the executive cannot oversee the legislature, and that's exactly what we believe that the auditor wants to do, insert herself into the doings of the legislature," end quote. This exchange ended after Gregoire told Cannon, "I guarantee you that if you ask 10 people out on the street what they voted for when they voted for that ballot initiative, zero of them would get it correctly. And I also would like to say that just because 72% of people vote for something, that doesn't make it magically legal or constitutional," end quote. These remarks gained steam on social media Friday when the watchdog Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance posted a video of that snippet. Quoting here, "Wait, so she's saying the voters are the ignorance one?" says Mrs. Aguilio in a post in response to the video. Representative Gregoire, yes, passing a ballot question into law does indeed and in fact make it law. Your violation of law is what's unlawful. The AG deemed it constitutional when she vetted the ballot questions. This all comes as Ms. Bilka and Ms. Dizal will remain fully entrenched in the legal fight before the state Supreme Judicial Court, while cities and towns are discussing whose side they should take. In February, Mr. Zoglio sued Mariano and Spilka for refusing to comply with the audit. The auditor is asking the SJC to allow her to appoint an outside attorney, as Attorney General Andre Campbell is representing top Beacon Hill Democrats. Siding with legislative leadership, Ms. Campbell has claimed that Mr. Zoglio has not answered basic questions on the scope of the legislative audit. A spokesperson for Maury Healey did not say whether the governor would file an amicus brief with the SJC in support of Ms. Dizoglio's suit. The spokesperson said, quoting, "Governor Healey has been very clear that she voted for the audit and thinks it should happen," end quote. Well, at least one Beacon Hill Democrat is supporting Dizoglio's fight. State Representative Alan Silvia, S-I-L-V-I-A, of Fall River, did file an amicus brief, stating that he has, quote, "a direct institutional interest in ensuring that the general court operates within the bounds of law, remains accountable to the electorate, and complies with duly enacted statutes," end quote. On to the local news page, and at the top of the page, an article entitled "Tiered Rate Plan Raises Alarm," and a picture of a home with outside utility meters. This is by Tim Dunn of the Herald. And again, his email address, timdunn@bostonherald.com, timdunn@bostonherald.com. A tiered rate system being developed by the state's utility regulator is raising concerns that the program will shift costs and ultimately hit middle-class ratepayers. The Department of Public Utilities, DPU, released its annual report for 2025 this past week, highlighting its probe into the state's energy burden and focus on affordability for residential ratepayers. As part of that process, the department held an all-day technical conference to come up with a tiered rate model for Massachusetts. We have here part of the report, quote, "On January 28, 2025, the department convened a virtual all-day technical conference to discuss the following issues. 1. How to determine a target energy burden level. 2. How to translate that level, energy burden level, into tiered discount rates and define the tiers. 3. How to address recovery of the revenue shortfall from discount rates." The report also said, using data and with stakeholder input, the department developed a tiered discount rate model to calculate discount rates based on a target energy burden with various assumptions, end quote. But one critic says the only thing a tiered system would do is continue to increase energy costs for taxpayers, especially if the state's net zero by 2050 climate mandate is not rolled back to a goals-based system, as was in place during the former Governor Deval Patrick's administration. With energy prices soaring, that's an approach suggested by State Senator and Minority Leader Ryan Fatman, F-A-T-T-M-A-N. Paul Craney, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Fiscal Alliance, is quoted as saying, "I'm doubtful that there will be any meaningful cost saving for ratepayers if they don't address the policies that are bringing higher costs. It'll probably just shuffle costs around, and ultimately the middle class will see their bills increase," end quote. As part of its investigation into high energy costs, DPU says it will evaluate whether certain charges should be eliminated, consolidated, or redesigned as a fixed charge, and review whether to establish maximum limits on net metering charges paid by electric customers without compromising the continued development of solar in the state. The report also indicates that along with capital investments, transition costs and grid modernization, Massachusetts ratepayers have electric vehicle program costs tacked on to their monthly bills. The report also said that other costs and mechanisms that the rates division reviews on an annual basis include the annual reconciliation of basic default service, transmission, transition costs and revenues, grid modernization, investments, interconnection cost allocations, electric vehicle program costs, pension and PBOB costs, and net metering costs. As Governor Maura Healey, the DPU, and state lawmakers continue to hang on to Massachusetts' climate policies and this so-called 2050 net zero mandate, an independent study released in November found that the state's climate and energy programs are to blame for the sharp rise in electric bills in Massachusetts. A separate 2026 study estimated that New England ratepayers would save between $400 to $700 billion by replacing planned offshore wind and solar projects in the region with natural gas and nuclear power. And a 2024 study by this coalition found that sticking with current solar and wind energy projects will cost New England ratepayers an estimated $815 billion. DPU Chair Jeremy McDiarmid, that's M-C-D-I-A-R-M-I-D, appointed by the Healey administration in August, touted the department's 2025 accomplishments while blaming a, quote, reversal in federal policy priorities for unprecedented affordability challenges, end quote. 2025 was a very productive year that saw the DPU advance many critical policy priorities, so-called, says McDiarmid, welcome new leadership, and continue to implement the many policies the legislature has entrusted to the department in recent years. At the same time, unprecedented affordability challenges and reversals in federal policy priorities have required the DPU to adapt. And a little side note here by Aaron Curtis with his email, acurtis@lowellsun.com, A-C-U-R-T-I-S @lowellsun.com from Lowell. An investigation into gunfire that was heard in the city's Highlands neighborhood led officers to discover spent shell casings in a parking lot on Reese Avenue Monday night. An officer conducting a traffic stop shortly after 9:15 p.m. reported hearing gunshots coming from the area of Industrial Avenue East. This according to police Deputy Superintendent Mark LeBlanc. Around the same time, the communication center received a separate call reporting gunfire in the same area near the Lowell Connector. It was reported in an emergency radio broadcast that the officer heard five or six shots. Responding officers searched the area and did locate several spent shell casings in a parking lot in the area of 26 Reese Avenue. No injuries were reported and no property damage was found. Officer LeBlanc said the preliminary investigation suggests it was an isolated incident, but detectives with the department's Criminal Investigations Bureau are actively working on this case. One note also on the local news page. This for anybody listening that's from Lowell or has a history in Lowell. To help celebrate Lowell's bicentennial by sharing your own story, you can submit a family story, a moment from growing up in the city, or your time working or serving in the community, military service, or any Lowell connection that's meaningful to you. Select stories will be featured on the new Lowell Bicentennial website as part of this once-in-a-lifetime celebration. For submissions, go online to bit.ly/Lowell200. Again, bit.ly/Lowell200. And from the arrest log in the local page, we do have the foreword. The following arrests were made recently by local police departments. All defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty. Massachusetts privacy law prevents police from releasing information that would involve domestic or sexual violence arrest as a goal of protecting alleged victims. From AIR, we have Sara Rego, R-E-G-O, 57 years of age, of Lancaster, on a warrant. Madeline Rose Varney, 30, of Ellington, Connecticut, operation under influence of alcohol, motor vehicle lights violation, possession of open container of alcohol in a motor vehicle. Samuel Perez Martinez, 42, of Leominster, for unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle. Gail Mary Giotiotis, 59, of Groton, operation under the influence of drugs, failure to stop. Stacy Coleman, of Ayr, on a warrant. From Hudson, New Hampshire, Cody Maki, M-A-K-I, 26, of Fitchburg, failing to comply with sexual offender registration. Edward Paquin, P-A-Q-U-I-N, of Hudson, failure to comply with sexual offender registration. from Lowell. Jose Luis Guerrero, 24, of Lawrence, warrant for possession to distribute Class B drug trafficking in fentanyl, trafficking in cocaine, failure to appear for operation of motor vehicle with suspended license. Also, Tre, that's the first name, T-R-E, St. John, 33, of Lowell, distribution of Class B drug. Jose Mendez, homeless, trespassing. Crystal Perry, Lowell, failure to appear for assault and battery, unauthorized use of motor vehicle, shoplifting, operating motor vehicle after license suspension. From Nashua, New Hampshire, Rebecca Hazel, 6, that's S-I-X, of Nashua, stalking, domestic violence order. Richard Johnson, Manchester, New Hampshire, operating motor vehicle after certified as a habitual offender, non-appearance in court. Dennis Velez, V-E-L-E-Z, Nashua, criminal trespassing. Christopher Jovan Spencer, homeless, criminal trespassing. Marisa Powell, 35 years of age, criminal trespassing. Michael Woodside, 58, homeless, criminal trespassing. Sean Kevin McGarvey, 46, of Goffstown, New Hampshire, driving a motor vehicle after license suspension. Christopher Albert Rossati, R-O-S-A-T-I, 34, homeless, trespassing. Thomas Silva, 41, of Nashua, non-appearance in court. Amanda Hall, 38, Lowell, conduct after an injury accident, driving under the influence, aggravated driving under the influence with a collision causing serious injury. Jose Samuel Mendez Encarnacion, 40, Nashua, operation of motor vehicle without a license. Jose Aguillo Campos, C-A-M-P-O-S, 21, of Nashua, operation of a motor vehicle without a valid license. Andre Torres, Nashua, operation of a motor vehicle with a suspended license. Jordan Jones, 25, Nashua, criminal mischief. Eric Scott Madeira, M-A-D-E-R-A, 38, homeless, non-appearance in court. Walter Daniel Blaschuk, B-L-A-S-C-H-U-K, Jr., of Nashua, criminal mischief, unregistered motor vehicle. Ismael Malave, M-A-L-A-V-E, 60, of Rochester, New Hampshire, violation of protective order. From Wilmington, Solomon Akimo Buhari, B-U-H-A-R-I, 45 of Lowell, assault and battery. Scott Thielen, T-H-I-E-L-E-N, of Everett, shoplifting. Juvenile 17, Mark Lane's violation, negligent operation of motor vehicle, passing violation, and speeding. Matthew Amentoya, A-M-E-N-T-O-I-A, 26 of Wilmington, assault and battery, disorderly conduct, malicious destruction of property, assault and battery on police officer, and threatening to commit a crime.
Thanks for listening to Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. There are many ways to listen to Lab Radio. Request a free specialized receiver, or for more information about our radio reading service, call Lab at 978-454-5704. You can listen to Lab Radio anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069. Or visit our website where you can tune into Lab Radio at LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. Thanks for listening.